Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the How We Scaled show. My name is Jeff Brandeis, president and founder of CEO of Brandeis Coaching and Brandeis Training Solutions. Each of our episodes will feature a CEO, VP of sales, or an entrepreneur that has scaled their business to six, seven, even eight figures. And on the show, we will ask questions to them about what they did that scaled their business, that grew their revenues, that made them what they are today. So you ready to listen and learn? Stay tuned. One, two, and three. Here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to How We Scaled. This is Jeff Brandeis, and do I have an exciting guest for you today? His name is Alan Diamond, and he's co-founder of Time Reaction. And I have no doubt that each of you will learn something and benefit from our conversation today. So, Alan, welcome to How We Scaled.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate the invitation and look forward to this.
Fantastic. So, Alan, I'll give you the opportunity first. Tell us about you and your company and what you do.
Okay. Time Reaction is a collaborative workflow management application. Basically, what it does is it allows both product development and production people, particularly in the manufacturing space, to manage their workflow and communication without the need for email or spreadsheets.
Wow. So if I'm in a manufacturing environment, this is a tool that I must have or should have in order to make things go a little smoother.
If you do want to make your life a little easier and I think less stressful, which is really important nowadays, 100%.
Okay. So if I'm not manufacturing and I'm in, you know, communications, telecom, or you know, using other products that I'm selling, can I use your product?
We've run into user case studies that are outside of the manufacturing industry. We have done some of the service industries. We did a beautiful proof of concept with legal mergers and acquisitions. Process runs, it's the engine behind any business. So as long as you're adapting the process and using that process to generate communication across a global supply chain or a global team, we're the fit.
Gotcha. Yes, process is one of the things I think a lot of entrepreneurs and, you know, good small to medium-sized companies tend to sometimes forget about. They're always into, let's go sell a product, let's go sell our services, and they haven't built that infrastructure to make sure it's actually delivered the way it should be delivered.
It's really interesting that you say that, because what we've come across is that people innately, and these are people that have been in business for many, many years, are very successful. They understand innately what their process is. But if you ask them to map it out, if you ask them to time it, they have absolutely no clue.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've done some work also with companies and asked them to, so what's your workflow? And it's kind of like then that they start to stutter, right? Because they haven't mapped it out right. So it's always interesting to hear how people actually get work out the door sometimes, and it amazes me, right?
It's, you know, the C-level team, they expect it to be something. And then when it comes down to, you know, the men in the trenches, it's a completely different story.
So I'm curious, what made you start this company? What got you into process and orientation, something like this?
I was a manufacturer. I did private label denim manufacturing for some of America's iconic companies. Basically, we were key suppliers to companies like Harley-Davidson, Timberland, Volcom, and Billabong. And we did it for 25 years. I was involved in the web very early on. Actually, 1986, I had to buy one share of Netscape, the precursor to Firefox. I had to buy one share because it was the only way I could use the browser. So I've been comfortable with this for years. And when we were working with some of our customers, basically they demanded a work in progress report. every week. We would sit down with our team. We would look at this huge whiteboard of hundreds of orders, and we needed to keep our customers updated. So what would happen is we'd have our 8:30 Monday morning meeting, and production would head off to their desk, talk to our contractors, our supply chain, fabric, trim, what was going on, then collate it on a spreadsheet, and then send it via email to our customer. It made no sense. We were wasting a day and a half a week just getting information together. And it was about 2000, 2001. The web was really becoming database driven. And I knew that if you could do it in an Excel spreadsheet, you could easily do it in database. So we created what was then called a portal. We put it in the cloud long before Microsoft had their commercial to the cloud. And what we did is that we created a transparent platform that allowed our contractors to be able to update real time what was going on. And simply by ticking something off, it would notify us that that task was complete. More importantly, it would notify our customers that the task was complete. So they never had to ask, they never had to know. And unless it fell off the rails, I never had to speak to them. They were able to log in and just see what was going on. So we didn't need to do WIP report, work in progress reports. It was just live, fully transparent across the entire supply chain.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thank you.
So you talked about, you know, back in 1986, before the internet was really the internet, I guess. And I remember Netscape too. We'll both show a little bit of age here. So when you look at your business, and obviously the name of my podcast is How We Scaled, what did you do to grow your company, your team, and get to where you are today?
Well, there was a clear definition in, I think it was 2008, 2009, when the economy tanked. Business just shut down. And it was basically, I was 53 at the time, and you talk about showing your age. I was 53 at the time, and I said, okay, is business going to turn around? If so, how long is it going to take? And is it going to come back the way I was used to, with basically me as the orchestrator in the middle? And we were, I don't want to say we were right, but basically you can see there's so much business now that's direct from retail to factory. So basically they've cut the middlemen out, and we have this technology that we've been using since 2000. And I remember it was, and many good stories originate over a bottle of single malt. I was sitting with a friend of mine who is an M&A lawyer, and he said to me, we were talking about it, and he said, Alan, do you realize you created, and he gave me the best elevator pitch I've ever heard. To this day, I wish I remembered it. it was one of those nights. Right. And we, at the time, my son was in university, he was studying computer programming, and it was almost a school project. And it was, he took it from this Microsoft-driven environment to open source. And he knew nothing about manufacturing, but he was a Facebook kid. So he understood how we needed to be able to take this, we'll call it a linear process that was very predetermined, and create the flexibility behind it. But more importantly, to add that social communication platform, or the social communication element, which is actually what turned things around. And that's what started us on a path from manufacturing into technology.
So that's how you go about getting your customers and growing the business today.
We're primarily outbound. I have a vast network of people as manufacturer that I knew the companies. We had already been working with them, and we began to, as the company started to, I don't like to use the word pivot, but as we shifted from manufacturing to technology, we realized, okay, everybody had the same problem. It's sort of eat your own dog food story. Right. And we began to reach out to people that we knew, people that we didn't know, that understood the story and build on it from there. What we also did is we, as we grew, originally we did order management and we did product development. So basically we were part ERP, part PLM, and there were too many of them out there. What we did do that was different was workflow, and we did workflow really well. And we did communication in a way that no one else did. I mean, you think back to the days of Slack. So really, we're kind of like Slack meets Smartsheet, which is a good definition of what we are. And as we did that, we understood that we could integrate or partner with ERP companies, that ERP, enterprise resource planning, does not do critical path really well. Basically, you will place an order, and you have a delivery date, and it goes into this dark, this black hole, this tunnel, call it what you want, and you're guessing where things are, and inevitably you're using a spreadsheet. So all we did is that we partnered with these ERP companies that when that integrated, that when an order was placed, it would automatically create this process to fill in that black hole.
That's awesome. There's lots of black holes out there, I'm sure. And it's great that you have that fit there to patch it and fix it all up. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, we believe that we found, and we were actually really surprised because you're talking with some of the bigger players, the NetSuites, the Oracles, that they just, it didn't exist. It did not make sense. I remember Kevin said to me, I can't believe that a company like NetSuite wouldn't have workflow built into an ERP system.
You think about workflow today, every organization, kind of go back to what we started with, every organization, every company has workflow, whether or not they want to realize it or not. There's work and it has to get flown. It flows through the organization one way or another. Whether you're a CPA firm, or you're a lawyer firm, you're a widget, you know, producing widgets or mm-hmm. you know, screwdrivers or whatever you're producing, it's a workflow that goes through a process. So you always have to think about the beginning, the middle, the end, and everything else that goes in between, right?
And more importantly than that, there are always, it's never that simple linear flow. There's always parallel sub-processes that are running below it. And what we did is that we really, in a very simple manner, we automated these sub-processes to pull triggers. But these sub-processes were not only about separate workflow, but it was also about separate teams. Right. Because for argument's sake, when you're creating the widget, the prototyping process is managed by one team, both here and overseas, call it China. And right. By the way, one of the great things that we do is that we've gotten through the firewall in China. Awesome. And you also have another team that's working on components. And so what we do is we allow the, for argument's sake, logistics, upper management to see that 30,000 foot view, and then all of the separate parallel processes running below it. We manage them all, different teams, different timelines, with one goal: is production starting on time and is production completed on time?
Very important things, unequivocally. So when you look at the technology over the past couple of years, how has technology impacted you and the company?
I think less about how it's impacted me, because this is what I know. I think how it's impacted the company, and more importantly, the world as we know it, is COVID. COVID was an indicator of flaws within the system. One of them, and it's been in our DNA from day one, is remote. To us, it's always been remote. Us, China, it didn't matter what location you were, there were diverse teams. The other thing that it exposed was the inefficiencies of supply chain. And these are the two things that we have, I don't want to say taken advantage of, but it's exposed the value of time reaction. in basically managing two real serious problems that are going to determine what's happening forward. We don't know what work space is going to be. Is it going to be hybrid? I mean, you're reading about it politically. Do they want to go back to work? Do they not want to go back? There's this whole dispute going on. We will not see the same workforce that we saw 2 years ago.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. It's COVID has definitely changed the environment, the culture, how organizations go to market, how they sell. And I think as we do get back to some normalcy, the hybrid, and there's different definitions of what hybrid really is too. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out over the next 6 months and you know, even moving past that time frame.
The good thing that we're seeing, and this is positive for all of us, is you're starting to see confidence again. You're starting to see that people have, and I don't want to use this word lightly, people have survived, business has survived, and now it's on the upswing. Right. And this has instilled a sense of confidence and joy in people that they haven't had in a long time.
Very, very true. So when you look at your industry, and I'm not sure exactly how to define your industry other than the workflow, is there something about it that really bugs you, with that the competition actually says things, or you know, it just irks you when you hear certain things?
That's an interesting one, because I've always been told, don't knock the competition. It comes down to philosophy. And we'll say that the workflow tools that are out there, the project management tools that are out there, have a different philosophy than we do. And that's centered around task management. And I believe that task management is flawed. And the best way to do that is using baseball as an analogy. In baseball, you go up to the plate, you got to hit the ball. That's your task. And you complete your task, you walk away, and then you're done. But that's not the way collaboration works. That's not the way team works. It's in baseball, you have a guy on first base. He can't do anything till you hit the ball. You have someone sitting on the bench, and then you have the coach giving hand signals to the guy at first base that, like, he's going to bunt. So you have four people involved in this rather than that one. And this is what we believe, this time reaction, this is the differentiator. It's all about inclusiveness of the team from the minute that PO is placed until the goods come in. It's that quality product on time, every time. It's all based around the team knowing what's going on. Step one knows that step two has been complete, and so on and so on. It's not about one task.
I totally agree with you, and I love the baseball analogy. I'm a fan as well. So if I was to rephrase my question, what makes you different than your competition?
There is a simplicity to it, but more importantly, I think one of the greatest differentiators is how we add value to both our partners that we work with, and how we bring a simplistic environment to our clients to be able to manage things. We talk about efficiency, you talk about productivity, and those are standard phrases. But something that really became apparent, and it really matters nowadays, is reduction of stress. The fact that you log in and you know in a real simple, this is all I need to do today, and I've done it. What didn't I do yesterday? What's running behind schedule? It's a real simple mechanism to know what's going on and to be able to communicate that effectively to your local team and overseas to your suppliers, so that everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, very, very true. So as a co-founder of the business and leader of the organization, share with us what you like to do on a day-to-day basis. What really is the most enjoyable part of your job?
I think that my greatest joy is demo.
Demo.
I absolutely love demos. It's because everybody you're talking to, and if you're doing it right, everybody that you talk to has a different spin on the same story.
Yep.
So you're constantly being challenged with permutations of how can I configure it? Because it's all about configurability. This is not an out of the box. This is everything is based on what matters to the client and how are you going to make their lives simpler?
I love your expression. And obviously this is a podcast and not everyone's going to be able to see the expression, but when I asked the question, your face just started lighting up when you said demo. And, you know, so many people love to being the presenter, being on stage, if you would. And I gather that's part of the joy that you get is being able to present your product and you know, satisfy the vision or the challenges as well of what the company's actually experiencing.
You said something very interesting, especially based on podcast, is when you run a demo, it's you feel it and I feel it. It's almost like you're reverberating, you're giving yep. off energy because it's the one thing that you really care about. You know, people talk about passion and passion can be seen. And yep. as you've said, passion can be heard. Yep. You feel it, you know it. And when you're doing things right, you know you've done it. You can get off a demo and you get, wow, I did well. I'm always looking for that wow experience and kind of disappointed if I don't hear it somewhere within the course of that demo.
True. It's so true. When I've been on so many presentations and even doing a candidly interviewing or podcasting, if you don't bring that level of enthusiasm or you don't bring the enjoyment of, hey, I'm really proud of my product and I want to show it to you and, you know, and I want to share with you what the results will be within your organization or your company, people sense it. I mean, if you're just going through, hey, let me show you this and let me show you that, and you just kind of have that monotone voice, I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, it's so easy to lose attention in today's environment by having someone watching your presentation just start using their phone, right? Yeah, be engaging. And
I think that one of the reasons that you can come across so confident, it's not, you know, some people are natural presenters, but I think that one of the reasons that I come across is that we know the impact. We worked with the Canadian government. You know, we were lucky enough to be involved in the National Research Council, what was called the Digital Technology Adoption Pilot Program. And basically, their study was intended to show that technology can improve productivity. And what we ended up doing is in this particular case study, and we share it often, is that I think it's based on 300 emails a day. We were saving about 2 hours per employee a day. We were reducing their email volume anywhere between 50 to 70%. And reducing their cycle time by, based on a 120-day cycle, by 18 days. So we have these metrics behind us that can really, it's not just about selling a product. It's knowing that you are delivering a service that matters.
I love it. And those are very significant numbers for sure. So as you look at the next year coming from now to the next year, where do you see yourself investing your resources in?
Right now, what we're doing is we're spending, outbound has always been where our strength was during COVID. Outbound, it suffered, bluntly put. So we focused on a blend of inbound and outbound. We're working with, you know, we've been working with Google Ads. We've been working with some of the software, Captera happens to come to mind, working with LinkedIn and building up. So we're beginning to build inbound traffic, but more importantly, what's happening is that our resource partners, our ERPs that we're working with, everything seems to be coming together. And I am I am so positive. I am so optimistic about what the next 6 months and or a year is going to bring, because it's everything that we've spent 10 years building has now hit critical mass.
Yeah, the next six months, I think, is going to be really a nice upturn for a lot of companies. So, Alan, when you're not working, what do you like to do?
What do I like to do? Lately, what do I like to do? I like to walk my dog. That's what keeps me busy. But I think for, as a person, you know, we've been married almost 40. We're coming up on 40 years. I have 32-year-old twin boys.
Wow.
I just became a grandfather to Theodore. So it's a whole new phase of my life. You know, you're proud that, you know, the Diamond name is going to move on to another generation. I used to be a little more involved in so we'll call it sports, tennis. I was tennis, an excellent skier. Unfortunately, these knees are not what they used to be. And the other thing is, I'm a classic rock and roller. I mean, classic vinyl is what I'm all about.
Very nice. I love it. So, Alan, if our podcast audience wants to get in touch with you, how can they reach out and find you?
It's really simple. You can either get a hold of me at Alan, A-L-L-A-N, at timereaction, TimeReaction.com, or just go to timereaction.com, contact us. If you really desperately need me, you can give me a call, 514-712-3711. I'm available, and I look forward to all conversations. You never know where they're going to lead.
I totally agree with that one, Alan. Thank you so much for being on my podcast of How We Scaled. Podcasters, listeners, thank you so much for listening. And next couple of days, we'll have another episode of How We Scale. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining. I truly hope everyone enjoyed the podcast here and our special guest. I know each of you are really excited to possibly even be a guest on our podcast. So feel free to fill out the application form that's below. We'll follow back up with you, be in touch with you, and it'd be great to have you. In addition, I know I'll be reaching out to you to see how we might be able to even do some business and have a conversation about working together. Again, thank you so much for joining our podcast. And if you do know of someone else that actually would like to be on the podcast, feel free to recommend him or her to also fill out the application below. Again, thank you so much for joining. Have a great day, and see you next week on How We Scale.